Welcome to Ad Exchanger Talks, the podcast devoted to examining the issues and trends in advertising and marketing technology that matter most to you.
This episode is sponsored by Infutor Data Solutions. Infutor connects companies with their customers by delivering real-time identities, attributes, and actionable intelligence from its identity graph of 266 million U.S. consumers. Keep listening to hear Zora Sennett, Infutor's SVP of Marketing and Partnerships, talk us through industry trends and how to better unlock the value of first-party data.
It's Allison Schiff, and welcome back to the show. Although Google's planned phase-out of third-party cookies in Chrome, now set for late 2023, has driven the ad industry into a veritable frenzy, the fact is, third-party cookies are already long dead on Safari and on Firefox. Firefox has blocked all third-party tracking cookies by default since 2019 through its enhanced tracking protection technology. It's technologies like ETP and the focus on privacy-preserving tech at Mozilla, the maker of Firefox, that attracted Lindsay Shepard, or Shep, as she's known to most, over to Mozilla in 2019 from Facebook, where she's now the chief marketing officer. Mozilla makes its revenue from advertising, but it's on a mission to strike a balance between building privacy-focused solutions and supporting the business of online advertising. Hey, Shep, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Allison, thank you.
So I have a totally random question to start us off. If you could have any superpower, what would it be and why? And I asked because I had this silly thought when I was preparing. I'm like, oh, maybe it's the power of invisibility online.
Oh, man. Superpowers. I mean, it depends on what's going on in my life that day. I think this week, I would love the ability to seamlessly communicate with teenagers. I think that would be interesting to speak that language right now. I think the superpower that I do have is not helpful. I have this ability to remember every song lyric of every song I've ever heard. And sometimes I wish I could sort of exercise some of that from my brain so I could remember things like my husband's phone number. But
maybe if it was a song, maybe if you sang your husband's phone number.
That's a good pro tip. Like it.
It's funny. I feel like my superpower I would love is to be able to speak any language and understand any language in the entire world. Like to have, you know, like a babblefish that you could put in your ear, but for that to just be my brain and have everything come out in the right accent, because I'm very good with English. That's pretty much all I got.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's kind of where I was going, being able to speak to my teenagers in a way that made sense with the right accent, the right slang, all of that.
The right accent. Same page. So I'd love to talk about your background for a bit, because you've been at Mozilla for nearly 3 years, but your job before that was at Facebook as the director of marketing for integrity for about 2.5 years between 2016 and 2019, which is sort of smack dab in the middle of the whole Cambridge Analytica thing. And Director of Marketing for Integrity is just a very interesting title. So what did that entail, and what did it entail like at that time?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it was definitely a really interesting time at Facebook. I think it probably continues to be. But at the time, sort of to your point, it was sort of, well, not at the beginning, but sort of when we all, you know, in this industry, in the tech industry, started to become acutely aware of a lot of the issues that the internet at large was facing. And there's not really a playbook for a lot of this stuff, right? Like it's all emerging day after day, week after week still. So at that time, so much of the work was really about you know, one, looking at what was going on in the ecosystem and how to think about how to best respond to that, but also really thinking about how to help the company have a more unified and comprehensive way of addressing some of those issues, both internally and externally, honestly. And, you know, at the time, a lot of that work really started in earnest in that really focused way after the 2016 election. So it was a fascinating time to be there. And frankly, you know, I grew a new part of my brain during that time. And it's the part of my brain that had me really, really excited to come over to Mozilla.
I was going to say, I mean, there's no playbook, but Mozilla is trying to create a playbook. So I wonder if you could talk a little bit about, you know, what it's like to market a browser when there's so much, it just seems like unceasing focus on Chrome and the end of third-party cookies. Because in one respect, it feels almost like a blessing because you can position yourself as the anti-Chrome. But at the same time, like Chrome is just sucking all of the air out of the room, and they do have a dominant market share right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. When you think of someone's online life, and you think of that experience right now, it's like especially, man, over the past 2 years, the lines have just become super blurry. Like we live so much of our lives online. And the browser in that sort of situation is really almost the backdrop or the portal to that whole experience, right? And I think over the past 2 years, not only have we been more online, but we've been becoming as a society increasingly aware of the good things and the bad things about that. And I think, you know, the great thing about Mozilla is that we've been around 20 years really trying to build solutions for people, you know, that let them get to the good stuff online without being screwed over, without being exploited. Yeah. And so, you know, when it comes to Firefox, it's just this really unique independent choice in a market that's flooded with options from these huge sort of behemoths that represent really complex ecosystems, and that really are optimizing for, you know, most of the time their own advertising systems. I mean, right? So in a world where the idea of online advertising is so central to the internet, just really recognizing that's really intrusive. So I think Firefox is really looking to create a space where people can make a different choice and have a little bit of independence from all that stuff.
When you said Mozilla, Firefox around for 20 years, this thought popped into my mind. My dad used to call Firefox Mozilla, like he would confuse the two, and he would call it Mozilla.
Mozilla.
That was funny. Mozilla.
Love it.
Anyway, so I have a fond memory of that.
I love it.
So, I mean, as you were saying, you know, online advertising, it supports the open internet. And I think Mozilla has a stake in keeping the open internet alive and well. You know, you're obviously not alone in the fact that, you know, Mozilla funds itself through online advertising. So just talk a little bit about Mozilla's business model. And then after that, maybe we can talk a little bit about some of the experiments and the testing products that you guys are doing to try and create a balance between privacy protection, but, you know, also enabling the funding of oneself, one's business, publishers, everybody through online advertising.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think foundationally, like the advertising ecosystem online is fundamentally broken right now. I believe that. And that's important to keep in mind. I mean, I think the future of online advertising is more private, more transparent, and that's where my brain is. That's why I'm here. So at Mozilla, we're really thinking about, you know, highlighting the good part of the internet while protecting people from the bad stuff. And so when we think about what are the different levers to influence the data ecosystem and online advertising, and you mentioned this, we're sitting at this fork in the road with the end of third-party cookies, we need to sort of ask ourselves, how do we build something better because there are really two scenarios right ahead of us when it comes to ad tech. It's either we end up with something brand new that does the same thing, right? Or worse, potentially, or we move towards a better model with more privacy built in. So in the last couple of years at Mozilla, we've started participating in that ecosystem in ways we really haven't done before. So we set up our own advertising network and started offering advertising spaces in our products. So I don't know if you've seen this, but you can see it in Pocket, in the Firefox new tab, and a newer product called Firefox Suggest. So really, in order to suggest, fundamentally, if we're going to suggest changes and really advocate for big change in the ecosystem, we have to participate in it and show what sort of effective, non-creepy advertising really can look like, right? It's transparent. It uses only the data that's necessary. And people should get to opt in, right? Transparency, privacy control. So to speak to a couple of the tests, I'm happy to do that. We created an ad work network through Suggest. So it's built with our values right at the heart of it, with transparency, working with trusted partners that share our values, and importantly, sort of scraping any unnecessary data before it's shared with any third party. But for me, as CMO, there's a whole nother piece of this, right? It's like in our own marketing, we have to be committed to those same values. So that's like kind of a whole nother ball of wax.
Well, I want to talk or stay with Firefox Suggest, because I don't know if all of our listeners know exactly what it is. And correct me if I'm wrong, but as I understand it, it's going to eventually let people run searches directly from the browser address bar in Firefox, and then they'll see curated results without necessarily having to visit another search engine like Chrome. And I think it's a really interesting move and also maybe a challenge to market, but you can speak to this because Google is still the default search engine on Firefox. So, it is a way to get paid for search that doesn't involve Google. But like when you're promoting a new tool like that, how hard can you go on the, I'm not sure how to put it other than like the anti-Google messaging?
Yeah, it's not even, it's the right question. When you take a step back, really at the core of that whole internet experience, right, with the browser as the backdrop, is discovery and navigation. But the reality is that it's become so optimized for clicks and for scrolling and not necessarily for getting people to where they want to go or what they're looking for quickly, right? It's really about oftentimes the highest bidder. So it's not necessarily aligned with what people are actually looking for in that experience. So here we were sitting with this hugely powerful tool in Firefox, and we realized that we could help people get a lot more value out of the web, faster, easier. So Suggest is really kind of that first step towards helping people navigate through the web and getting them where they're going a little faster. And frankly, it is tricky. We expected a little bit of scuttle about the feature. We get that it's different, but ultimately we want to provide a choice for people who want a more purpose-driven and independent company to create something for them that provides like real privacy, transparency, and help with navigating the web.
And there are a lot of other tools in that vein, right? There's enhanced tracking prevention, which I believe inspired intelligent tracking prevention from Apple, predates it. You have a VPN, you have a tool that basically fixes web experiences that get broken by tracking protections, Smart Block, so like a stand-in script that behaves like a third-party tracking script enough to make a page work properly, but without actually tracking. And you mentioned Pocket, there's more investment in Pocket with that ad network. So just talk to me a little bit more just about striking the right balance between supporting online advertising and also like creating tools that, make it more difficult for, the status quo to exist, which I know is the point. You guys ran a campaign, I think a couple of years ago, Shep, when you and I first met, which was about un-effing the internet. I think I can curse on this podcast. It's my podcast, unfucking the internet.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah, the great thing about being at Mozilla is the incentive structure is really special. It's brilliant because Mozilla is owned by a not-for-profit and is really a mission-driven company that's looking to build a better internet, create sort of, you know, a space that people can get the most out of it. And I think in a lot of ways, people think of us as this really sort of a trusted guide to help navigate the web and find the best spots in it. So when we talk about like threading that needle between advocacy and our own products, I think I kind of disagree with the premise of that framing. Like we're really trying to walk the walk more than anything. You know, we make a browser and we're an ethical company driven by this mission. So we want to really ensure that the interests of users are represented and that privacy is a priority. But we benefit from the advertising ecosystem. So it gives us a unique perspective on the issues. And, you know, that's why we do sort of engage and contribute in the debate happening about privacy preserving ads, for one. Because we think there's, I think there's a real opportunity right now to improve the privacy properties of online advertising. So things like Google Privacy Sandbox, for example. This is an industry that hasn't really seen any material privacy improvement in a long time. So we shouldn't squander it. But while we're contributing to the debate, right, it's an ongoing conversation. The plan in the browser is to continue to ratchet up the privacy protection. So you mentioned enhanced tracking protection. That work continues. You know, we want to eliminate cross-site tracking. So, you know, we're not going to wait to protect consumers in order to satisfy targeting that the advertising industry says that it needs.
And what is the, just to play devil's advocate, like what, I guess, in a sentence or two, is the problem with cross-site tracking, like at its face? I guess, like if somebody were to opt into such a thing, then it would be considered okay. Although if you think about how the advertising ecosystem has developed, yeah, it's, you know, such a tangled web, giving one's permission is kind of a impossible task, really. But just, I guess, frame it for me. Like, what is the devil in cross-site tracking?
Sure. I mean, I'm going to say this really plainly. I think it's fine if people know it's happening, but they don't. So what's happening is you go on one website or one app, and then you pop into another one, and all that information is following you around. And I think that most people, the lion's share of people, don't realize that. And so the ads that you're seeing across different sites aren't just what that website, you know, is getting from you. It's like you're leaving this trail of breadcrumbs for advertisers to follow you around. And, you know, sometimes that's okay, right? Like we've all made really great purchases online. And oftentimes that's a result of targeting that's really effective. But we've also seen the way that that can be weaponized. So, you know, advertising isn't always just about products. It's about sponsored content. And sometimes, you know, there are bad actors that are really weaponizing, like polarizing information or content for harm. And when you think about things like cross-site tracking, on the surface, it's about like shopping and helping people find products. But I think, you know, the ecosystem's really complicated. We've talked about that. So we need to think of unintended consequences of this sort of stuff. And we have to let people make that decision. I mean, ultimately, what I do online is my business. And I don't necessarily want someone that's, you know, selling me a new sweatshirt to know what kind of toilet paper I use. Like, it's just not necessary.
Interesting cross sell. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I mean, like, it's crazy. The ways you can target people these days are nuts. And it's not necessary. And we deserve more privacy and agency in that. We deserve more control over the information that people have.
So we're going to take a quick break, but when we're back, we're going to talk a little bit about what Mozilla is doing to contribute to the debate about what the future of online advertising and privacy online looks like, and some new work that Mozilla is doing at the W3C.
I'm Sarah Sluice, executive editor at AdExchanger, and I'm here talking with Zora Sennett, SVP of Marketing and Partnerships with our sponsor, Infutor Data Solutions. Hi, Zora.
Hi, Sarah. Thanks for having me. And thank you for hosting the podcast. My colleagues and I have been big fans from the beginning.
Thank you so much, Zora. Can you help our listeners understand what the identity resolution landscape looks like right now?
Sure. So as you know, it was a challenge pre-pandemic for companies to effectively unlock the value of their first-party data, but COVID has certainly accelerated that trend and compounded all of the problems that identity providers have been operating against for years. Changes in consumer locations, their identifiers, their purchase patterns, and there are more connected devices now than ever before. And that means that advancements in new media and updates to operating systems will make targeting across those devices a challenge. And beyond that, people are just living their lives, changing jobs, having kids, developing new interests. That's a lot of a variability to manage at scale while maintaining a level of comfort around the accuracy of your consumer profiles. So you can see how challenging it is for the marketer to keep up with those changes. From Infutor's perspective, we've been tackling this problem for nearly two decades, which doesn't mean we are perfect at a perfect fit for solving any sort of identity problem out there, but it does mean that we have a level of expertise that allows us to leverage this velocity of change as an accelerant for our business in our product strategy.
So Infutor's approach is being agnostic to identifiers and also agnostic to brands, publishers, and platforms. How do you manage this variety of clients?
Great question. In terms of use cases, brands typically work with us direct or through one of our clean room partners or platforms to build and enrich their first party data. So there it's all about understanding a brand's appetite for data, where it's most impactful, and then routing those insights to the right place at the right time. On the publisher side, the goal is all about extending reach and adding additional identifiers to help improve onboarding and performance for advertisers. And platforms incorporate our data in-app to improve their own consumer identity offering. So we built a lot of flavors of identity resolution services, but what makes it simple to service the brands, the publishers, and the platforms is that those services are all anchored to one thing: our identity graph, which we view as the most complete and accurate picture of adult individuals and households in the US. And we've layered on flexibility in the form of delivery as well. So a lot of our services and data sets are available to test in platforms like Snowflake and Amazon's Data Exchange On Demand today. These can inform custom models, analytics, audience segments, you name it.
Thank you, Zora. Where can our listeners go to learn more about Infutor?
Well, you can check us out at infutor.com/AdExchanger. That would be I-N-F-U-T-O-R, infutor.com/AdExchanger. Thanks again, Sarah.
Thank you, Zora.
Okay, and we're back. So one thing I think is really interesting, and Shep, you alluded to it before the break, is the role that thought leadership plays in Mozilla's marketing. So you guys develop your own technologies like enhanced tracking prevention, like we talked about, but you also research and you publish analysis of other privacy-focused web technologies. Right. Really recent one that I read was by Eric Rescorla, the CTO yep. of Firefox. Talking about Google's privacy budget, which is meant to help prevent fingerprinting by limiting the amount of information that an entity can access or detect in someone's browser. And like, spoiler alert, Eric uncovers a bunch of problems with it, like the fact that it's actually possible to use it, to use privacy budget mechanisms for tracking, which kind of defeats the purpose. Just taking a step back, why do you guys publish these sorts of pieces?
Why do we publish them? I mean, I think, you know, I spoke to this earlier, but I think we're in a really unique position to be able to have a perspective that's unencumbered by, you know, some of the tensions that other companies have. But we've got the tech expertise to really have a strong point of view. So, you know, specifically around Google's Flock proposal, you know, the goal of that effort's to make it possible to target ads based on the interests of users without revealing their browsing history. So this is really interesting in concept. We're just talking about this and definitely worth exploring. And we love to see that exploration, you know, the exploration of that type of work. But the current design has a number of troubling privacy properties that are difficult to fix. And I think our ability to engage and have those discussions and really have some thought leadership around them, backed not just by our 20-year history of being really invested in this type of work and in this sort of territory of work, but also by the technical expertise that allows us to sort of ask the right questions. And I think, you know, that combination can be really powerful.
And what sort of role does this play, this type of thought leadership play, in marketing Mozilla? Like, how do you use it from your perspective?
Sure. I mean, we got to consider your audience, right? Like, the first rule, the golden rule of marketing is, who are we talking to? And I think that our thought leadership, our expertise in this space, our like obsession with protecting people over the years, it shows up differently depending on who we're talking to. I mean, when we're thinking about these regulatory bodies and folks that maybe have a little bit more foundational understanding of the ecosystem, we can really kind of get into it with the things like you're talking about, the work that Ecker's doing. We call Eric Ecker. That's his nickname.
Okay. Everyone now has a nickname. I know. You are Shep and he is Ecker. Does everybody have a nickname?
You know, kinda. I'm a nickname gal, but Ecker is widely known as Ecker. I think even his kids call him Ecker sometimes. So okay. That's him. So, you know, that's a different audience, and we can really leverage that expertise and get kind of deep. But when you're thinking about sort of broader consumer audiences, you can't have the expectation that people are going to spend hours and hours like doing their homework and understanding the complexity of something that, you know, it's tough. It's tough to really talk through and understand, even if we spend all day every day on it, like you and I do. So when it comes to sort of a basic consumer set, I think there's just a few things that really resonate with people. And one of the most important ones is that we're backed by a nonprofit. I mean, that means something to people. And that we've got this long track record of pushing back on big tech, and making decisions in our own products and the way that we work, all the way down to our own corporate advertising, that really supports what we're after here. So, you know, again, I think it just depends on the audience, but ultimately knowing that we're in the room and that we're, you know, at the table when these important conversations are happening and when different policy decisions are being made just gives us some gravity in being able to help people understand that we're here to make sure that, you know, the right decisions are being made on their behalf.
I mean, in that vein, I very recently learned that Mozilla is behind the formation of a new group at the W3C that's going to review proposals and work with different members to try and reach consensus, which, I mean, to my mind, is a humongous nut to crack. It's my impression that a lot of heads are butting up against each other on the long and winding road to technical solutions that, you know, everyone can live with, you know, supporting the business of online advertising and doing that without scrimping on user privacy. So just tell me a little bit about that new group and why would Mozilla want to step in the middle of what I think is a total minefield?
You're probably right. It's definitely a complicated space. Okay, so we just initiated what's called the Private Advertising Technology Community Group in the W3C. And essentially, it brings together these major players of the online ad ecosystem. And the headline there is that we're trying to work together in this broader group to identify alternatives to third-party cookies. Alternatives, of course, that put privacy first.
And what are some examples of companies that join this community group?
Yeah, so it's kind of the usual suspects. It's the people that you would expect to be in the room for a conversation sort of as big as and meaty as that. So different ad networks, publishers, Google, Facebook, Microsoft, the Washington Post. There's lots of big players in the room.
So that is a group to talk about B2B technologies that will have a huge impact on consumers, because we're talking about, you know, what will underpin monetization online. So B2B with a dotted line to B2C, but very squarely focused on B2C. Every year, Mozilla puts out a holiday shopping guide, but it's not yes. like a regular, or at least not your typical holiday shopping guide. You guys call it the privacy not included guide to help consumers decide which tech products they can trust from a privacy perspective and which ones to steer clear of. So I had a look at it. I mean, some of the worst offenders, it's not super surprising, like Facebook Portal, Natch,
right.
Amazon Echo, but surprisingly the Nordic Track treadmill.
That's
interesting. So tell me a little bit about that guide. Like, how should people use it? Why you go through the effort of compiling it every year? Just some takeaways.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this is one of the projects that I love, right? Because when we think about helping people find the good stuff online, like this is just such a great way to do that. So, you know, the point here is to give people, consumers, you know, regular folks, the information that they need to make buying decisions during the holidays. Like, this is when a lot of us make purchases like this. And a lot of times the data is hoovered up by connected devices and apps. That's the real product that companies are selling to advertisers. Like, it's the currency. So this gift guide, it really is a gift guide, is one of the ways that we're working to try and push people to be more transparent. And there were some really fun takeaways from that. The way that we frame the guide, Allison, is with each product, it's this idea of creepy versus not creepy. And we've seen people really sort of adopt and use this framing because it's easy, it makes sense. And frankly, like, obviously, people generally want to stay away from creepy stuff and are happy when they're using something that isn't. But this year was super interesting. So we reviewed 151 different products. And this is a lot. I think we spend upward like 6.5-7 hours researching the privacy policies, et cetera, of all of them. So this was a sort
God
of a
help
big,
you.
Yeah. Well, big chunk of work, but that's important, right? Out of that 151, 49 received our warning label. Our privacy not included warning label. That's a lot. So not great. Some of the worst companies were Facebook, Samsung, Peloton, Amazon. But that warning label, we base the ding on a couple of things. First, did the product meet our minimum security standards? So there's like a basic set of standards that we like people to meet. Two, how does the company handle data, right? Three, relatedly, do people have control of that data, right? And then four, what's the company's track record for security and privacy? So 49 dings based on that. But then on the flip side, 22 products earned the best of designation. So that's good. 14 different companies stood out as doing really well with their privacy practices for not collecting data, et cetera.
Who did really well?
Yeah, I mean, the best companies, I mean, Apple was sort of the shining star of the well-known ones, but there's some other really interesting stuff too. So Apple is the least creepy of the big five, right? And there was like Garmin, Ecobee, there's some good stuff. I can kind of tell you about the trends, like the things that we're liking to see.
Yeah.
So people who live under GDPR or CCPA regulations, like that's a good thing. We're seeing positive stuff there. People are choosing to store their data locally instead of in the cloud. There's some great work being done by public health officials who are looking to collect information about COVID-19 outbreaks in like an anonymized way, which is great. There's a company called Whoopstrap 4, one called Kinza and Aura that are helping to track this stuff. And then there's some great stuff happening in kids products. So parents of kids who want to get their kids interested in coding, right? Very online activity. And there are some really cool products on the market. My favorite one was the iRobot Root and the Artie 3000. These are the good things. But then there's some bad stuff, some stuff we're concerned about. First of all, and I mentioned this, the 6.5 hours, right? So like a lot of these privacy policies are way too complicated. Like nobody's going to take this time.
Are you saying 6.5 hours for each product? No.
For each product.
Shut up.
And I will not, because it's crazy. And, you know, we have some experience in this. So, and frankly, even after a lot of that time, oftentimes there were still questions we couldn't answer. So it's too complicated. And, you know, people don't want to spend hours and hours and hours of their life just to be able to use a product. That's no bueno. There's a lot of location information tracking, which isn't cool. And one interesting, like, related thing about that, there's a lot of apps and products around pets. And, you know, when you think about pets, like, no one cares about your dog's data. Like, when apps or products are asking to track your dog's location, they're likely tracking you. So that's an interesting thing to think about. But another thing you mentioned was Nordic Track, right? So people who exercise, and this is really interesting to me. I'm a runner. I spent a lot of time on a treadmill. And especially over the past couple years, like, a lot of folks have really invested in personal home equipment with these sort of integrated apps and all of this stuff. But fitness trackers share personal information with third parties, and they may or may not use it properly. So, like, broadly, exercise equipment is kind of a privacy nightmare. There's a product called Onyx Books. And we think that, I don't know, it's maybe the creepiest product in the guide. Check that out.
What is it?
Oh my God. Just check it out. I mean, all these things are very similar, but, like, you know, you mentioned Nordic Track, Allison. That one, I think, gets the star for having the creepiest privacy policy. Like, when you kind of dig in and take a peek.
So my takeaway from this, tell me if I'm wrong, is that the fact that I'm very lazy and don't really exercise or own any exercise equipment is actually protecting my privacy. Is that right?
Like, you know, it's bad for your health.
It's bad for my physical health, but my online health, I'm doing
no,
great.
It's good for your online health. Exercise, yeah, that's the takeaway. We all need to chill out a little bit.
And then I think we have time for one more question. And I guess I should have asked you this at the top, but I'm curious what you think about Google's move to block third-party cookies in Chrome. I mean, you guys have blocked third-party cookies by default in Firefox for years already. But what do you make of Google's move? Because, of course, all cynics will say it is a thinly veiled, way to make changes that, you know, Google already wanted to make, but under the guise of privacy. But by the same token, Mozilla does believe that third-party cookies enables cross-site tracking, and cross-site tracking is a bad thing. So what do you make of the move?
Yeah, I mean, we want all browsers to protect their users from cross-site tracking, like, period. We think everyone should be moving quickly to do that. And right now, Chrome's the only major browser that doesn't offer sort of meaningful protection from that tracking. So ultimately, it's a good conversation to be seeing. You know, this scrutiny is really healthy, and it's the direction that we want to move. Because, I've said this before and I'll say it again, like, the future of online ads and the whole ecosystem is more private, is more transparent. And people need to really think in that way. And people need to have more control over their data. And in order to see that happen, sure, it takes big players like Google and their Chrome browser. It takes independent players like Mozilla and Firefox. But it also some of the ownership is on us as consumers to really start to demand these changes and kind of get up to speed on, you know, advocating for ourselves in this space too. So that's a lot of, when I think about the work and helping people understand what Mozilla stands for and what we're doing here, so much of it is about helping people understand their place. It's not about us, it's about people, because it's really going to take us attacking it from all angles to get to a place where we have a better internet.
I wish I had more time, but I have to go and read the privacy policy for every electronic device I've ever bought. And it's a good thing the holidays are coming up, so I have the time.
Enjoy.
I will not enjoy. Shep, thanks for the time.
Oh, always a pleasure, Allison. So great to talk to you.
As stated earlier in our episode, Infutor Data Solutions, our sponsor, connects companies with their customers by delivering real-time identities, attributes, and actionable intelligence from its identity graph of 266 million U.S. consumers. Visit infutor.com/adexchanger, that's infutor.com/adexchanger, to see all the different ways you can unlock new value from your first-party data.